is Michael Hansen, welcoming you to another half hour of Mindflayers, short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. The story this half hour comes from Ursula K. Le Guin's The Wind's 12 Quarters. Here's April in Paris, read by J. Meredith Fitz.
Professor Barry Pennywither sat in a cold, shadowy garret and stared at the table in front of him, on which lay a book and a bread crust. The bread had been his dinner. The book had been his life work. Both were dry. Dr. Pennywither sighed and then shivered. Though the lower floor apartments of the old house were quite elegant, the heat was turned off on April 1st, come what may. It was now April 2nd and sleeting. Dr. Pennywither raised his head a little. He could see from his window the two square towers of Notre Dame de Paris, vague and soaring in the dusk, almost near enough to touch. For the island of Saint-Louis, where he lived, is like a little barge being towed downstream behind the island of the city where Notre Dame stands. But he didn't raise his head. He was too cold. The great tower sank into darkness. Dr. Pennywither sank into gloom. He stared with loathing at his book. It had won him a year in Paris. Publish or perish, said the dean of faculties, and he had published and been rewarded with a year's leave from teaching without pay. A month in college could not afford to pay unteaching teachers, so on his scraped-up savings he had come back to Paris to live again as a student in a garret, to read 15th-century manuscripts at the library, to see the chestnuts flower along the avenues. But it hadn't worked. He was 40, too old for lonely garrets. The sleet would blight the budding chestnut flowers, and he was sick of his work. Who cared about his theory concerning the mysterious disappearance of the poet François Villon in 1463? Nobody. For after all, his theory about poor Villon, the greatest juvenile delinquent of all time, was only a theory, and can never be proved, not across the gulf of 500 years. Nothing could be proved. Besides, what did it matter if Villon died on gallows or, as Pennywither thought, in a brothel on the way to Italy? Nobody cared. Nobody else loved Villon enough. Nobody loved Dr. Pennywither either. Not even Dr. Pennywither. Why should he? An unsocial, unmarried, underpaid pedant sitting here alone in an unheated attic in an unrestored tenement trying to write another unreadable book. It was then 8:12 on the night of April 2nd, 1961. A man sat hunched at a table in a cold, high room. Through the window behind him, the two square towers of Notre Dame loomed in the spring dusk. In front of him on the table lay a hunk of cheese and a huge, iron-latched, handwritten book. The book was called in Latin, On the Primacy of the Element Fire Over the Other Three Elements. Its author stared at it with loathing. Nearby, on a small iron stove, a small alembic simmered. Jean Lenoir mechanically inched his chair nearer the stove now and then for warmth, but his thoughts were on deeper problems. Hell, he said finally, in late medieval French. Slammed the book shut and got up. And he strode about the garret, raging, and then stood still. All right, he said to Destiny. Very good. You have given me nothing, so I shall take what I want. He went to one of the stacks of books that covered most of the floor space, yanked out a bottom volume, slapped it on the table, and began to study one page of it. Then, still with a set cold look of rebellion, he got things ready. Sulfur. Silver. Chalk. Though the room was dusty and littered, his little workbench was neatly and handily arranged. He was soon ready. Then he paused. Oh, this is ridiculous, he muttered, glancing out the window into the darkness. where now one could only guess at the two square towers. A watchman passed below, calling out the hour, 8 o'clock of a cold, clear night. It was so still he could hear the lapping of the Seine. He shrugged, frowned, took up the chalk and drew a neat pentagram on the floor near his table, and then took up the book and began to read in a clear but self-conscious voice. Hayer, hayer, aude me. And it was a long spell, and mostly nonsense. And then his voice sank. He stood bored and embarrassed. He hurried through the last words, shut the book, and then fell backwards against the door. Gap-mouthed, staring at the enormous, shapeless figure that stood within the pentagram, lit only by the blue flicker of its waving, fiery claws. Barry Pennywither finally got control of himself and put out the fire by burying his hands in the folds of the blanket wrapped around him. Unburned but upset, he sat down again. He looked at his book, and he stared at it. It was no longer thin and gray, entitled The Last Years of Villon, An Investigation of Possibilities. It was thick and brown, entitled Incantatoria Magna. On his table, priceless manuscript dating from 1407, of which the only extant undamaged copy was in the Ambrosian Library in Milan. He looked slowly around. His mouth dropped slowly open. He observed a stove, a chemist's workbench, 2 or 3 dozen heaps of unbelievable leather-bound books, the window, the door. His window, his door. But crouching against his door was a little creature, black and shapeless, from which came a dry, rattling sound. A very Pennywither was not a very brave man, but he was rational. He thought he'd lost his mind, and so he said quite steadily, "Are you the devil?" The creature shuddered and rattled. Experimentally, with a glance at invisible Notre Dame, the professor made the sign of the cross. At this, the creature twitched. Not a flinch, a twitch. And then it said something feebly, but in perfectly good English. Well, no, in perfectly good French. No, in rather odd French, really. He said, "Mais vous êtes de Dieu." Barry got up and peered at it. "Who are you?" he demanded. And it lifted up a quite human face and answered meekly, "Yon Lenoir. What are you doing in my room?" There was a pause, and Lenoir got up from his knees and stood straight, all 5'2" of him. "But this is my room," he said, very politely. Barry looked around at the books and alembics, and then there was another pause. "Then how did I get here?" "I brought you." "Are you a doctor?" Lenoir nodded with pride. His whole air had changed. "Yes, I am a doctor. And yes, I brought you here. If nature will yield me no knowledge, then I can conquer nature herself. I can work a miracle. To the devil with science, then. I was a scientist." And he glared at Barry. "But no longer. They call me a fool, a heretic. Well, by God, I'm worse. I'm a sorcerer, a black magician. Yon the black. Magic works, does it? Well, then science is a waste of time, ha." But he didn't really look triumphant. I wish it had not worked," he said more quietly, pacing up and down between folios. "So do I," said the guest. "Who are you?" Lenoir looked up challengingly at Barry, though there was nearly a foot difference in their heights. "And Barry A. Pennywither. I'm a professor of French at Munson College, Indiana, on leave in Paris to pursue my studies of late medieval French." and then he stopped. He just realized what kind of accent Lenoir had. So what year is this? What century? Please, Dr. Lenoir. The Frenchman looked confused. The meanings of words change as well as their pronunciations. Who ruled this country? Lenoir gave a shrug. A French shrug. Some things never change. Louis is king. Louis the 11th. The dirty old spider. Then they stood staring at each other like wooden Indians for some time, and Lenoir spoke first. Then you are a man? Yes. Now look, Lenoir, I think you muffed it a bit.
Evidently. Are you French?
No.
Are you English? Are you a filthy goddamn?
No. No, I'm from America. I'm from your future. From the 20th century, A.D.
Please sit down, sir.
Lenoir was saying, and he added with the fine, though absent, courtesy of the poor scholar. Are you tired from the journey?
I have bread and cheese, if you will honor me by sharing it.
So they sat at the table, munching bread and cheese. At first, Lenoir tried to explain why he had tried black magic.
I was fed up. Fed up!
I have slaved in solitude since I was 20.
For what?
For knowledge. To learn some of nature's secrets. They are not to be learned.
Well, some are, Lenoir. We've learned a good bit here and there.
But what?
Well, I'm no scientist.
Can you make gold?
No,
I don't think so. But they do make diamonds.
How?
Carbon, coal, you know, under great heat and pressure, I believe. Coal and diamond are both carbon, you know, same elements.
Element?
Now, as I say, I am no...
Which is the primal element?
There are about 100 elements, Barry said. 2 hours later... Having squeezed out of Barry every dribble of the remnants of his college chemistry course, Lenoir rushed out into the night and reappeared shortly with a bottle.
Oh, my master, to think I have offered you only bread and cheese.
It was a pleasant Burgundy, vintage 1477, a good year. And after they'd drunk a glass together, Lenoir said,
If somehow I could repay you.
Well, you can. Tell me, do you know the name of the poet François Villon?
But yes. He wrote only French trash, you know, not in Latin. Do you know how or when he died?
But of course. Hanged at Montfaucon here in 64 or 65 with a crew of no goods, just like himself. Why? 2 hours later, the bottle was dry. Their throats were dry, and the watchman had called 3 o'clock of a cold, clear morning.
Oh, Jan. Oh, I'm worn out.
Guess you better send me back, said Barry. The alchemist was too polite, too grateful, and perhaps also too tired to argue. Barry stood stiffly inside the pentagram, a tall, bony figure muffled in a brown blanket, smoking a Galoise Bleu.
Adieu, Lenoir said sadly.
Au revoir, Barry replied. Lenoir began to read the spell backwards. The candle flickered, his voice softened.
Hey, Audi, hey, air, hey, air.
He read and sighed and looked up. The pentagram was empty. The candle flickered.
What? I learned so little,
Lenoir cried out to the empty room. And then he beat the open book with his fists and said,
and a friend like that, a real friend.
He smoked one of the cigarettes Barry had left him.
He had taken to tobacco at once.
He slept sitting at his table for a couple of hours. When he woke, he brooded a while, relit his candle, smoked the other cigarette, and then opened the Intentatoria and began to read aloud. Ayer, ayer. Oh, thank God, Barry said, stepping quickly out of the pentagram and grasping Lenoir's hand. Listen, you know, I got back there, this same room, Jan, but old, horribly old and empty. You weren't there, and I thought, my God, what have I done? I'd sell my soul to get back there to him. What can I do with what I've learned? Who'll believe it? How can I prove it? And who the devil could I tell it to anyhow? Who cares? I couldn't sleep. I sat and I cried for an hour. Will you stay? Lenoir said. Oh, yes. Hey, look, I brought these in case you did invoke me. And sheepishly he exhibited 8 packs of cigarettes, several books, and a gold watch. It might fetch a price. I knew that paper francs wouldn't do much good. At sight of the printed books, Lenoir's eyes gleamed with curiosity, but he stood still. My friend, you said you would sell your soul. Do you know? So would I. Yet we haven't. How did this happen? That we are both men, no devils, no pacts in blood. Two men who have lived in this room. I don't know, said Barry. We'll think that out later. Can I stay with you, Jan? Consider this your home, Lenoir said with a gracious gesture around the room, the stacks of books, the alembics, the candle growing pale. Outside the window, gray on gray, rose up to the 2 great towers of Notre Dame. It was the dawn of April 3rd. Their life soon settled into an easy routine. At first, Barry was a little nervous in the crowded streets, but in the spare black gown of Lenoir's, he was not noticed as outlandish except for his height. He was probably the tallest man in 15th century France. Barry's watch brought a tremendous price. 4 gold pieces, enough to live on for a year. Mornings they wandered about seeing the Bastille and the churches or visiting various minor poets on whom Barry was interested. After lunch, they discussed electricity, the atomic theory, physiology, and other matters in which Lenoir was interested. He performed minor chemical and anatomical experiments, usually unsuccessfully. After supper, they merely talked. Endless, easy talks that ranged over the centuries, but always ended here, in the shadowy room, with its open window to the spring night, in their friendship. After 2 weeks, they might have known each other all their lives. They were perfectly happy. They knew they would do nothing with what they had learned from each other. In 1961, how could Barry ever prove his knowledge of old Paris? In 1482, how could Lenoir ever prove the validity of the scientific method? But it didn't bother them. They'd never really expected to be listened to. They'd merely wanted to learn. And so they were happy for the first time in their lives. So happy, in fact, that certain desires always before subjugated to the desire for knowledge began to awaken. I don't suppose, Barry said one night across the table, that you ever thought much about marrying? Well, no, his friend answered. That is, I'm in minor orders. And it seemed irrelevant and expensive. Besides, in my time, no self-respecting woman would want to share my kind of life. American women are so damn poised and efficient and glamorous, terrifying creatures. And the women here are a little dark and small like beetles with bad teeth, Lenoir said. So they said no more about women that night. But the next night they did, and the next... And on the next, celebrating the successful dissection of the main nervous system of a pregnant frog, they drank 2 bottles of Montrachet 74 and got soused. Hey, let's invoke a woman, Jan. Barry said, in a lascivious bass, grinning like a gargoyle.
But what if I raise the devil this time?
Is there really much difference? And they laughed wildly and drew a pentagram.
Hier,
Lenoir began. And when he got the hiccups, Barry took over. He read the last words. There was a rush of cold, marshy-smelling air, and in the pentagram stood a wild-eyed being with long black hair, stark naked and screaming. Woman, by God! Is it? And it was. Here, take my cloak, Barry said, for the poor thing now stood gawping and shivering. So he put the cloak over her shoulders. Mechanically, she pulled it around her, muttering, Gratias, Domine.
Latin! A woman speaking Latin?
It took him longer to get over that shock than it did Bolta to get over hers. She was, it seemed, a slave in the household of the sub-prefect of North Gaul, who lived on a smaller island of the muddy island town called Lutetia. She spoke Latin with a thick Celtic brogue and didn't even know who was emperor in Rome in her day. A real barbarian, Lenoir said with scorn. So she was. An ignorant, taciturn, humble barbarian with tangled hair, white skin, and clear gray eyes. She'd been waked from a sound sleep. When they convinced her that she was not dreaming, she evidently assumed that this was some prank of her foreign and all-powerful master, the sub-prefect, and accepted the situation without further question. "Am I to serve my master?" she inquired timidly, but without sullenness.
"Not me," Lenoir growled, and added in French to Barry, Quiet. I will sleep in the storeroom, and he departed.
For an additional 2 sols a year, the landlord let them use the storeroom as a second bedroom, and Lenoir now slept alone again in the main room of the garret. He observed his friend's idol with a brooding, unjealous interest. The professor and the slave girl loved each other with delight and tenderness. Their pleasure overlapped Lenoir in waves of protective joy. Botta had led a brutal life, treated always as a woman, but never as a human. And in 1 short week, she bloomed, she came alive, evincing beneath her gentle passiveness a cheerful, clever nature. Lenoir sat up on his cot and brooded. About midnight, when all was quiet, he rose and noiselessly prepared the pinches of sulfur and silver. He drew the pentagram, opened the book. Very softly, he read the spell. His face was apprehensive. In the pentagram appeared a small white dog. It cowered and hung its tail, and then came shyly forward, sniffed Lenoir's hand, looked up at him with liquid eyes, and gave a modest, pleading whine. A lost puppy. Lenoir stroked it. It licked his hands and jumped all over him, wild with relief. On his white leather collar was a silver plaque engraved Joli Dupont, 36 Rue de Seine, Paris. Joli went to sleep after gnawing a crust, curled up under Lenoir's chair, and the alchemist opened the book again and read still softly, but this time without self-consciousness, without fear, knowing what would happen. Emerging from his storeroom bedroom honeymoon in the morning, Barry stopped short in the doorway. Lenoir was sitting up in bed, petting a white puppy, and deep in conversation with a person sitting on the foot of the bed, a tall, red-haired woman dressed in silver. The puppy barked, and Lenoir said, Good morning! The woman smiled. Jumping! Jesus! Barry muttered, in English. And then he said, Good morning! When are you from? The effect was Rita Hayworth sublimated. A Hayworth plus the Mona Lisa, perhaps.
From out there. About 7,000 years from now, she said, smiling still more wondrously.
Her French accent was worse than that of a football scholarship freshman.
I am an archaeologist. I was excavating the ruins of Paris the Third. I'm sorry I speak the language so badly. Of course, we know it only from inscriptions.
From Altair, the star?
But you're human, I think. Our planet was colonized from Earth about 4,000 years ago. That is, 3,000 years from now, she laughed most wondrously. John explained it all to me, but I still get confused. It was a dangerous thing to try it again, Jan. We've been awful lucky, you know. No, you're not lucky. But after all, it's black magic you're playing with. I don't know your name, madam. Kislyk. Well, listen, Kislyk. Your science must be fantastically advanced. Is there any magic? Does it exist? Can the laws of nature really be broken as we seem to be doing? I have never seen or heard of any authenticated case of magic. Well, then what goes on? Why does that stupid old spell work for Jan, for us? That one spell, and here, nowhere else. For nobody else in 15,000 years of recorded history. Why? And where did that damn puppy come from? The puppy was lost, Lenoir said. Somewhere near this house on the Ile Saint-Louis. And I was sorting potsherds, Kislyk said. In a house site, Island 2, Pit 4, Section D. A lovely spring day. I hated it, loathed it. The day, the work, the people around me. Again, she looked at the gaunt little alchemist, a long, quiet look. I tried to explain it to Jan last night. We have improved the race, you see, but there's an occasional genetic flaw. Me, for instance. I was trained as an archaeologist because the teachers saw that I really did not like people. Alive people. People bored me. All like me on the outside, all alien to me on the inside. When everything's alike. Which place is home? But now I have seen an unhygienic room with insufficient heating. Now I have seen a cathedral not in ruins. Now I've met a living man who is shorter than me, with bad teeth and short temper. And now I'm home. I'm where I can be myself. I'm no longer alone. Alone, Lenoir said. Loneliness, eh? Loneliness is the spell. Loneliness is stronger. Really, it doesn't seem unnatural. Walter was peering round the doorway, her face flushed between the black tangles of her hair. She smiled shyly and said a polite Latin good morning to the newcomer. Kislyk doesn't know Latin, Lenoir said with immense satisfaction. We must teach Botta some French. French is the language of love anyway, eh? Come along. Let us go out and buy some bread. I'm hungry. Kislyk hid her silver tunic under the useful and anonymous cloak while Lenoir pulled on his moth-eaten black gown. Borta combed her hair while Barry thoughtfully scratched a louse bite on his neck, and then they set forth to get breakfast. The alchemist and the interstellar archaeologist went first, speaking French. The Gaulish slave and the professor from Indiana followed, speaking Latin and holding hands. The narrow streets were crowded, bright with sunshine. Above them, Notre Dame reared its two square towers against the sky. Beside them, the Seine rippled softly. It was April in Paris, and on the banks of the river, the chestnuts were in bloom.
Ursula Le Guin's April in Paris, from the book The Wind's 12 Quarters, read by J. Meredith Fitz. For MindWebs, this is Michael Hansen. Technical operation for this program by Marcia Phillips. These programs are produced at WHA Radio in Madison, the service of University of Wisconsin Extension.
This is the Wisconsin Educational Radio Network.